All right, and welcome to the podcast. So guys, this is a new podcast. This is our very first episode. So if you're on, congratulate yourself because this is going to be huge. Or maybe it won't be, but it'll be huge for somebody. It's already kind of cool for me. And what I want to do with this podcast is I want it to be an educational podcast, but really we're going to set it in the form of we're just having a conversation. And the nice thing is that I've sort of set myself up here with somebody that I'm very comfortable with. And my first guest will be Bethany Lopez. She's somebody I really respect and admire, and I've learned a lot from in the past and continue to learn a lot from. So today we're going to pick her brain and we're going to talk about relationships and some other fun stuff, and we'll go from there. So Bethany, welcome to the first portion of the podcast.
Thank you. I'm super excited to be here. Like a lifelong dream of mine to be on a podcast,
right? Doesn't everybody wants to be on a podcast? Like it's just like that next level of importance in society.
This shows
right?
that I've arrived. I feel like.
Well, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're here. So tell us a little bit about yourself and why, you know, why you do what you do.
Well, that's a real, I guess, hard question to answer. But for anyone that doesn't know me personally, I'm the youngest of five. Only girl, and I am a local business owner, a mom to one lovely 5-year-old boy, a Christian, you know, I think that's all I can come up with right now. I don't know how to sell myself very well.
No, that's perfect. That's the kind of thing we want to hear. So somebody that's a local business owner, that's huge. I mean, especially in this area, there's a lot of commerce, but there's a lot of competition too. So
yeah.
Good for you for starting that up and being successful with it, like relatively early on. You know, that's one of the things that I'm proud of.
I got to hand it to my brothers, though, you included. I come from just a family of entrepreneurs, basically business owners such as yourself. And I've learned a lot as the youngest. I feel like I've learned a lot from each one of my brothers. My mom also owns a business. And so I've had a really great network so far. I can't really attribute all the success to myself. I've just had a really great, solid group of people to learn from.
Yeah, for sure. Having a nice team around will make all the difference in the world. You know, just coming up, having that supportive environment, having that introductory type environment is super fun. One of the things that I wanted to go over with you is I noticed one of the things that you're really good at is communication. And maybe you don't feel like you are, but I know it's something that you're very strong at.
I certainly love it.
So we're going to get into that right now. So I'm super glad that you're here. And as far as like communication, one of the things that I've learned from you and from Josiah is it really has to do with maybe more how you say it than what you say, and nonverbal cues. Is that something you think you're really super strong with, is the nonverbal stuff, as far as maintaining relationships and kind of dealing with people in a business, like a professional manner, as well as your personal life?
I think so. I mean, they say, I'm not great about statistics, but they say that, I don't know, I think it's like 80% of communication is nonverbal. And I think you can certainly see a lot from someone's feelings, even if they don't exactly say what their feelings are. You can usually see them on their face. And so I try really hard. So, you know, I was homeschooled all my life, so I had nothing but time to think about what kind of situations I might be in if I made a friend. And so,
let's talk about that. So how much of your upbringing and how much of your social life and how much do you think it was affected by the fact that you were homeschooled?
You know, growing up, I feel like I used to say that I'm really lucky because I was homeschooled all my life, graduated homeschool, never once went to public school, and my social cues my social skills are pretty good. But then I came into adult life and actually trying to navigate friendships, and I've found that to be challenging. It's definitely not something that comes to me naturally, and mm-hmm. I've been finding through trial and error, this is how I can be a good friend. I don't think that that's something that comes with just being a good person. And that's something that I had to learn pretty early on. Just because you're a good person doesn't make you a good friend. And so I put a lot of effort in, and I'm not going to say that I have a ton of friends yet. But I certainly hope to one day be have more than a handful.
Well, I think, right, and quality over quantity, right?
Right.
I find that within my circles and sometimes the social circles of downtown, there's a lot of people that you know just a little bit.
Yeah.
And you kind of wonder if, you know, how deep those friendships are and, mm-hmm. and if they'd miss you if you were gone. I don't know. That's mm-hmm. that's kind of a silly one. But, you know, like how close am I to this person? No, they'll give me a hug when I see them at work at the door. But is it because, you know, I'm working the door or is it because they actually like me, you know? You kind of wonder.
Right. And you know what? Now that you mentioned that, I think that I tended to idealize people. And mm-hmm. so that when I did actually get into the real world and start meeting people, it was more difficult.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, yeah, for sure, being homeschooled changed my view of things. Mm-hmm. But maybe how do you feel like it changed like your view and just kind of being the youngest and female and all that?
I mean, I think the more that I look back, the more I realize that it did affect my ability to learn how to make friends, or maybe not so much make friends, but keep them. I did have to learn in my adult life that friendship takes maintenance, and it's a lot more than just agreeing with someone and complimenting them, and that's still something that I'm working on. I feel like it is important to surround yourself with people that you do disagree with. And that's not going to mean that you're going to be the best of friends, but the mark of a true friend, I feel like it is someone that can disagree with you and still love you at the same time.
Right. Right.
And I think that's hard. I think that's hard for anybody to get outside their comfort zone and really be able to see things from another person's perspective.
Yeah. And you know, I would say that a real friend would be willing to disagree with you.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have to find out when it comes to certain situations, whether or not your friend needs a shoulder mm-hmm. or some advice and kind of where those intersect, right?
Yeah. And there's really, that just takes practice because it's not something that just comes in the manual. It's hard to know what you need from me right now when you're crying. Do you want me to tell you the truth that maybe you did mess up in the relationship and it is kind of your fault? Or do you want me to just hug you and tell you everything's going to get better if that's what you really want? It's hard to know.
Yeah. I think women deal with that maybe a little bit more than guys do sometimes with, as mm-hmm. far as looking to their peers for support, or maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm super independent and
ultimate man.
I don't care as much, but yeah, I think it's really tough to see things once again from people's perspective and kind of figure out what they need based on that. How important do you think perspective is?
I mean, I think if you're going to be a well-rounded individual, you need it. I mean, it's easy to hold a position when everyone else is agreeing with you, but you get to really see how strong your opinions are when you're with people who don't agree with you. And if you're not right. willing to move once logic and reasoning presents itself, and once facts get in the way of your opinions, then it just says something about your character.
Yeah, for sure. I know that sometimes I'll find myself in a devil's advocate kind of a thing, and I have to sort of push myself through logic just to try to play that end of the spectrum. Yeah. I guess I've found that sometimes playing devil's advocate can figure out how strong someone's opinion is or exactly. what their conviction's like with regards to whatever the situation is.
Yeah. How can you really know how good your opinion is if it hasn't been tested against something? There has to be a standard or else it's just a really low bar.
Yeah. Have you ever been in the middle of arguing something and then realized you were wrong?
Oh, yeah. You got to play that off so smooth, though, too. Because, I mean, it's one thing to admit it to someone else. You already admitted it to yourself.
Yeah. I would. Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's one of the things that you kind of have to deal with when you're of an argumentative nature like me.
Yeah. You have to admit to being wrong. And being admitting that to yourself is easier than saying, hey, you know what? I know I was arguing this, but you convinced me. You win.
One of the things that I find in day-to-day life sometimes is internet conflict mm-hmm. with regards to political dissonance or anything like that. It seems so easy to engage in at times if you have any kind of political opinion, because you're always going to be able to find somebody that has the opposite opinion and is very staunchly married to that opinion.
Well, then, and another thing about internet arguments is you can Google stuff really quickly to support your claims. It's one thing to argue on the internet. It's entirely another thing to argue in person when you can't be like, hold on, I need to look this up and be really precise about it. I mean, I've spent a good 15 minutes on some of my Facebook arguments just fact-checking myself.
Honestly, that's part of why I don't really have Facebook anymore. I know I'm missing out on people's birthdays. Guys, I'm sorry about that. Sometimes I forget people's birthdays, and I don't know who's had babies and that kind of thing either lately.
Sometimes it's nice to just see a surprise baby on your feed when you had no idea they were pregnant.
Yeah, I think at 35, most of my friends' babies are on purpose. It's weird.
Yeah, that's got to be a strange thing.
A lot of surprise babies when you're in your young 20s. And then as
that's when it's supposed to happen anyway.
That's what they say.
If we plan to have babies, imagine how old we would be once we finally decided we were ready.
I've spoken like someone with a baby. But I think you're right as far as sometimes making a move just has to be one of those things you just do when it comes to almost anything that's real serious, like planning for a child or planning a wedding and that kind of thing. We're not geared, I don't think, to want to change. We're creatures of habit.
Exactly. They say 50% of babies are unplanned.
50%?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It's down 10% now.
Oh, well, that's
just
impressive.
Just as we speak.
I would kind of venture to say that this maybe has a little bit more to do with women than it does to men, as far as the decrease in early births, right? Would you think so?
Yeah. Well, I mean, how many men do you know that are on the pill right now?
I know they're working on it. They're talking about doing a once daily kind of a thing, just like they do with the female prophylactic. Have you heard too much about that?
Well, here's my question. I'm no scientist, but I can't even take a one a day. And so I really struggle. I don't know too many men that take anything one a day that they don't have to. So
I've always kind of been curious about that because I feel like there's so much that we do that is regimented. And I think most people have a relatively regular schedule. And I would also venture to say that most people have a smartphone or some kind of thing that they can keep on them in order to kind of keep track of the time and current events and everything else. So setting an alarm on that and just popping a pill doesn't seem like a big deal to me. But when you talk to gals, it seems like more of a big deal to them. It seems like a real hassle.
Well, there's a real consequence to not taking your birth control.
Right. Which would seem to me that like you would just hear the alarm, go to your purse or your pocket, take the pill, and then be on your day.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that men defer to women a lot and because they have to really in that issue. And it's that, you know, I missed my pill, but she probably took hers. Or, you know, if you're doubling up, I know a lot of people are scared to have babies these days. It's too expensive to even take care of yourself where we live. So I can imagine. I still don't know. I'm still a little skeptical if we do get the male contraceptive really able to work and available to everyone, how many men would actually volunteer to take something every day and be consistent with it?
I feel like I could. But, you know, I'm 35 years old, so I think I passed that point where
you're responsible now.
I mean, I guess I could claim a little bit of adulthood now, but I don't see that as something that would be a real barrier to my life. And yeah. I've seen a number of advertisements on TV for certain kinds of female birth controls, mm-hmm. and they make it seem like it's such a huge hassle to try to find and take your pill mm-hmm. Once a day. Yeah. But
I don't think I've ever been adult enough to take a birth control pill. I just like to set it and forget it. That's how I roll through my life, and it's worked so far. I mean,
it's so crazy sometimes too, like the side effects that some of those pills have. That, I mean, death, stroke, loss of hearing, whatever it is, just all this crazy stuff. I would say, yeah, for sure, that some of the side effects, you want to call them, of any medication, I guess, can be pretty intense, and sometimes not, you know, worse than the original problem itself, right? You have dry skin, and you take this medication, it can cause thoughts of suicide. But
you know what's interesting? A lot of medications don't really have the side effects of a baby.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's a real serious consequence or side effect.
Imagine how faithful we would be to take our vitamins if we knew that it would prevent us from having a baby.
So with regards to that, what are your feelings on some of the side effects that birth control gives you? Because I've taken a look and I've had some friends that started on the pill, and man, I I'm not going to name any names. You're welcome. But this gal was a very good looking gal. And after a couple of years of taking the pill and maybe not regular diet and exercise, I mean, the transformation was crazy. I mean, she grew some facial hair. She gained a lot of weight. Yeah. She was always sweaty. And I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it varies from person to person.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's not even, there's so much more going on inside than you can even see. So as a woman of a certain age, I've been on a lot of different kinds, and each one there is no perfect one, and each one has their side effect. And it's really about what you're willing to deal with. Some people wouldn't mind gaining a few pounds. And some people wouldn't mind a little body hair. For me, I think hormones make me a little more crazy than I would want to be. And so I'm on a non-hormonal IUD. But I think that a lot of men say women are crazy, but they fail to think about the fact that we're introducing hormones into our body that are setting off the balance. And of course, that's going to make us a little crazy.
So when you say crazy, like maybe you can define that for us, like as far as your opinion of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to speak from my experience. That's the only one I have. There's been some that I've been on that have caused depression. And I think when you're sad, you tend to make things more about yourself than you should. And the mood swings, being grumpy a little more. It's like PMS times 10 sometimes.
Wow.
And so you can imagine being around someone like that. And of course, you're going to think, wow, this person has just become someone I don't know, or I can't stand them now. And it's like, well, you know, if you had to take a pill every day, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. We'll see how it all pans out if men get the side effects that women do from the pill.
So I guess a good follow-up question might be, as you've started to date a different type of person, and maybe, you know, as you're advancing into your late 20s, what's been the biggest difference in guys that you've found that you're dating? I know you're in a relationship now. Sorry, guys. But what's been the biggest difference in the guys between the guys in their 20s and guys in their 30s?
I think that's been the most pleasant surprise that I've experienced dating men in their 20s as opposed to men in their 30s, is that they are willing to take more responsibility and agency over, hey, I'm going to bring a condom, or, you know, do you want me to, and they're asking questions and they're asking for consent, and they're making sure that they share in the responsibilities with you as a partner, or even as someone that, you know, you hook up with.
It always seems like it's uncharted territory, and it's so scary. I can't, it's really hard to put into words sometimes how nerve-wracking it can be to try to approach a new relationship with a new person and figure out what your new boundaries are and what some of the things that are really going to be a turn on or turn off for them are going to be. I mean, maybe that's just one of the differences between guys and girls, is that guys can be so rudimentary when it comes to that. And women have traditionally been the gatekeepers, right? Of what's allowed.
Well, yeah. And really in this kind of our generation of women that are willing to have a little bit more sexual freedom and be willing to say, hey, this is what I like. And be willing to introduce new things. It is a fine line, I think, because you don't want to be the one that knows more, but you also don't want to come off as a prude, which is somehow wrong. It seems like there is an ideal in-between zone that men want. And I think it's hard for women, and I'm going to speak for myself. Maybe it's just a small minority of women who, hey, I want to find out what you want from me, before I show you, and then maybe little by little, you can kind of see what I'm bringing to the table.
That's an interesting perspective on it. It's an interesting take on it, because I guess personally, I haven't really found that to be an issue or a point of contention as far as a woman maybe knowing more than I do or knowing less than I do. I've just been lucky as far as figuring out who might be, or just kind of feeling my way through it and sort of sussing out in the middle of it and being okay with who that person is more than if I'm comfortable being the superior knowledge, you know, on that.
Well, I think definitely because you're of a certain age, that works.
Personal experience wise, I don't remember if, or I guess I don't think that if any of my experience, the idea of the female partner maybe being more sexually experienced or adventurous or whatever has played a part in my insecurity, but it's a possibility that that's just because, you know, I'm in my 30s now and I'm a lot more secure with who I am, and I've never felt insecure about that part of my life.
Right. And even coming, I'm not quite 30 yet, I'm 28, but even the way that I felt about that subject has changed in the last couple of years. And now at this point, I wouldn't want to date somebody that made me feel like what I was used to or what I had known before would be an issue.
Right. That's kind of I guess that's one of the ins and outs of finding a relationship or being in a relationship with somebody in this day and age is kind of finding that out up front sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think there are certain apps out there. One of the more popular ones, right, it's like Tinder, where people just put themselves right out there.
Yeah.
Like right away.
Yeah.
I mean, you've seen the crazy ones that you don't know if they're real or not.
Yeah.
Or it's like, hi, my name's Lisa. I like pictures of unicorns and I can fit my whole hand up my butthole.
Oh,
and you kind of wonder if that's
like,
it's
been a while since I've been on Tinder.
I'm just seeing the extreme ones. And once again, some of these ones, I'm not sure. I'm really not sure what to make of them, but everybody's different. And I think this is a day and age where a lot of people are so open to new things.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes a lot of partners, and that's, I don't know if that's a new thing. You know, the fact that people are comfortable with being intimate with a whole lot of people at once or in a short period of time. I don't know that that's a new thing, but it's definitely newly popular in that arena.
I think with the revival, well, not revival quite. I think with the invention of these dating apps, it's a lot easier than it was before to just find it. If you're looking for sex, you're going to find it. Especially if you're a woman, you're going to find it. And so maybe that may be contributing to the number of partners, but that is quite a change in our society. I feel that people are willing to talk about their numbers now, particularly women. Women are willing to discuss that now.
Right. It's definitely one of those things that has evolved in our society as far as people's comfort level with being more transparent with their sex life. People advertise, and sometimes I listen to certain types of music, particularly pop culture and like pop music, R&B, rap, and that kind of thing. And you're able to sort of see a lot of where our influences come from as far as sexually and being able to communicate that kind of thing. It's really funny to be at the club and someone puts on 3-6 Mafia and Lil Jon or whoever it is and skeet, skeet, skeet. That would have never been accepted, I don't think, with our parents' generation. That would have been something that would have been completely filthy and really shunned by almost everybody, I would say.
Well, I mean, that's interesting that you bring that up, because I was actually listening to another podcast, the song Louie. You know that song?
Right.
It was found to have been a very filthy song, and there was a FBI investigation on that song.
Yeah, you kind of like, you look at some of the hidden meanings behind the previous generation's music, and they were not just, they weren't out there as much.
Yeah.
They weren't out there as much. They weren't as sweat drips down my balls, all
exactly.
these bitches crawl, skeet, skeet. It really gives you a very vivid picture of like what's going on inside the head of the kinds of people that are singing it. And sometimes the kind of people that are enjoying that kind of music, it's a very catchy tune, but I think it's brought this openness and this like latent hardcore sexuality to the forefront. And that sort of ushered in this, like our millennial generation's perspective on sex, which it can be a good thing in a way as far as expressing yourself, but also there's a lot of negative to it if you're irresponsible about it.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I feel like the millennial generation has changed societal norms in a way where it is acceptable to talk about your sexual history. It's acceptable to be pretty explicit, whereas older generations and maybe even ours, we had a little bit of shame. And who knows if that was a good thing. Of course, we look at it and we think, you know, how bad could it have been to not talk about, you know, if we've had a threesome, you know, should people know everything? And I think that's the question we should ask ourselves. Just should people know everything?
Well, yeah, transparency is one of those things that is not, it's definitely not in short supply anymore with Facebook being, you know, letting all your information out. Yeah, people want each other to know where you're at, what you're doing, who you're with, checking into places. And
do they
Snapchat and all this fun stuff? So it's like it's one of those things where you kind of wonder if at some point that we're going to have enough of a central consciousness or enough of a like a central transparency to be able to figure out everybody's been with, or if that's just a complete invasion
really create
of
the kissing
privacy
tree.
We don't. Yeah, that's one of the things that really is scary, right? You show somebody that tree, and it's where Bobby kissed Sue, and Bobby also kissed Jamie, and then Jamie and Sue each kissed three people, and then Bobby kissed four more people, and then and it's just this giant mass that looks like some sort of like DNA cell or like you know, something on the periodic table or some sort of like mycelium strain that just opens up and it realizes, you got to realize like how tied in people are to each other. But at the same time, it's a little scary.
Yeah. And I think on that vein of thought, transparency, I think that people confuse transparency for honesty. And if we found that on, we can find no better example than Facebook, because knowing where someone is doesn't tell you how they are. And so we have this culture of saying, hey, you know, I'm here. I'm not lying about being here. Here's a picture. And but they're not really saying, you know, I'm sad. And we all know that person that goes on Facebook and says, I'm sad, and then makes everyone feel awkward. So honesty and transparency, I don't know if it's the same thing, but we want to share everything. And I think previous generations had a better thing going in terms of, hey, maybe I don't want to share this. I want to choose what I share. I want to be selective with it. Special people get to know. You used to be able to make your Facebook private. Now you can't. You can only do that with Instagram.
Sure. It's kind of scary, I guess. And I know I keep using that scary word, but to me, the ability to not be able to control what people know about you can be a little bit unnerving. It's one of those things where you just like, you can go online and search someone's name and figure out based on what other information is online, where they live, where they work, who their siblings are, street addresses and all that kind of fun stuff. And it becomes a little bit more obvious that our information's just all out there.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we know at this point that our privacy really doesn't exist too much.
Yeah.
With the trial of the Mark Zuckerberg going before, you know, what was it, the Congress, and a lot of the information that people have. And people put everything on Facebook, right?
Yeah.
You could really go online and a lot of people are putting pictures of the insides of their home and the outsides of their home
when
and their
they're
car.
On vacation.
And that you could know a lot more about somebody than they would think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a real big secret anymore, but I have a podcast that I listen to pretty regularly, and the host of the podcast more than once has mentioned that he thinks that sometime in the future that we're going to have a central consciousness, and that it's really going to be tougher to lie to each other because we're going to have to rely on the rest of our species. Uh-huh. I don't know how far that is off or if it'll ever happen, but he's very convincing when he says it, and he's better with words than me.
Well, it's certainly true that people get caught because of the internet. Holly Madison, all those hacks, people are doing things that they don't necessarily want to be caught doing, but because everything is on the internet, can't really control it anymore.
How do you feel about, let me ask you this, this is kind of a crazy question, and this question's open to anybody listening, you can contact us. How would you feel about if there was an app, and this app was essentially like a Yelp for people, right? So in the app, you could figure out who has slept with who, and they have to be honest about it, who slept with who and how it was.
With
a rating system. Do you think that would be something you would down? How many downloads do you think you would have? And how many relationships do you think it would ruin?
You know, I think it would probably ruin a lot of relationships that weren't based on honesty. But I guess it depends on what you're looking for, too. Because if you're looking to hook up, you could really get some great suggestions with the five-star people in there.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. And, you know, in this day and age, it's not a new thing to ask how many people your partner's been with, and really more to figure out how safe you are physically and in the sense of your own well-being and your own personal safety than any kind of judgment. But like, for sure, there's like, it's something that people are asking more and more. But let me ask you this. Is that something that would be important to you? Do you think that's something that's important with a guys and a girls relationship as far as being honest or even just asking that question? What's your number?
I think that's a great question. I have been asked that before and been able to give a satisfactory answer. But I think the thing that makes it kind of a deal breaker for me is the fact that there does seem to be a right answer. It's not really a genuine question where there's an okay answer that could be not what you, there's always something that you wanted to hear when you ask that question. Right. And I think that a person that asks that question, they're not really the person for me because I do have a number. It's not a super high number, but it's not one. And
but
it's not two.
Don't you think that maybe the person that's going to be intimate with you maybe deserves to know? I mean, depending on what your level of involvement with them is?
I think there's a better question. And the better question is, are you clean? Do you have anything that I should know about? Am I safe? That's sure. The important question to ask. And there are many people that have been promiscuous that have never contracted anything. They're completely healthy. Is it fair that they should be questioned and be treated like they're dirty just because they've had a number? I don't think our value should be dictated on how many people we've been intimate with. Imagine how limiting that would be to a relationship that could potentially be very beautiful when at the very beginning someone asks something so limiting like that is, how many people have you been with? I've been with four. That's too much.
Let me talk on the other side of this, just for the sake of cognitive dissonance here. One could argue that a person that has a really high number or what they consider a really high number is somebody that has some intimacy issues. And that might help you out down the road. If you run into somebody that has a really high number, you can kind of get an idea of if they're not consistent or they can't hold together a relationship, or this is a person that probably has a much higher sex drive than I do. And, maybe something, I think, once again, on the other side of what you're saying, it's kind of limiting, sure, to be like, you know, what's your number? That's a little much. I can't deal with that. But I also wonder sometimes if somebody was somebody you really liked, gave you a number you really didn't like, if that would be something that would still put the brakes on what you were doing. Because I doubt that for guys that would even be a thing. And I'll get into that with a personal reference of somebody that that I was with very, very early on. And I asked this individual like what their number was, and they were honest with me, and it was 2 to 3 times what I was really comfortable with, but it didn't slow down my progress. It didn't keep me from doing, keep me from hooking up with that person.
Well, and your frame of reference is going to be different as a male, and I can speak from my experience as a female. Most females lie because they think there is a right number and they're far above it. They want to err on the side of caution and be dishonest, because at the risk of honesty, they could lose what they want. And I have had to come clean with some people that it's really a value thing. What it's coming down to is, it seems like you have a value that surrounds that, that's gonna make a promiscuous person maybe less valuable in your eyes. And so I've had that before, where I have been with someone, we dated for a little bit. He knew me as a Christian and, a good girl, homeschooled, good character, integrity. And then later on, I told him a little bit about my past, and he did start treating me differently. And so I've had that before. Now, I'm not going to say that that's everyone's story, but I guess really the question is, when somebody asks you a question so pointed as that, are they going to hear the number and say, this person seems to be emotionally unstable. I wonder if I could be the one to fix them. Or is it a genuine question, or is it a question that has the right answer? And that's going to vary from person to person. But I think that everyone that's ever asked me that question has seemed like they were deciding my value with the answer.
Or maybe, and maybe it could be just somebody that's trying to figure out how safe of a sexual partner you are. I think, once again, going back to the lying thing, like, I think it's really easy. And I know people that, if you ask them, are you safe when you have sex? Do you use protection, not just birth control, some kind of like barrier, just to protect against any kind of like STI? I know people personally that have had things and have lied about that too. Mm-hmm. So it's a tough one. It's a tough subject, and it's tough to even talk about without offending somebody, because they feel like their number is higher than it should be and they don't know where they're ashamed. But I think that maybe if people are ashamed at their number, then it's probably not a bad time to like reevaluate where they are as far as relationships and what they want out of it besides sex, right? But one thing that you said that was super important was, sometimes people feel like that they're determining your value by asking your number, and the fact that people are asking you for different reasons. There's going to be people that don't care. There's going to be people that are willing to overlook everything in the past. And that's a real big train of thought right now, is nothing that happened before me mattered.
Right.
But if you ask yourself, you don't have to answer this, but sometimes there's people that say, well, it doesn't really matter what happened before me. But if they found out, if that same person was to find out that their partner, let's go the extreme route, had been with 100 people before them, I think a lot of people's opinion might change.
And I think those are the kind of people that just don't ask. Because would you rather know than to just be in the dark? And that's where the people that usually say what happened before me doesn't matter, they usually aren't the ones that ask, what's your number?
Or maybe there are people that have their own past to hide, right? And they kind of don't want to be asked. So they're putting the shoe on the other foot.
Right. And I appreciate those people too.
Well, I mean, it's something that I guess every couple has to deal with at some point in time, if they choose to be intimate with each other, or sometimes even if they don't, you kind of want to know who you have. You kind of want to know where that person is. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there that feel like that you should have a phase of your life where you're wildly promiscuous. I don't share that train of thought, but I understand the logic behind it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
people feel like that it's character building. I think that a lot of times you can damage yourself as far as trying to figure out what you want and trying to work that number of people. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. And I think it's, everyone wants what they haven't had. So I've met people that got married right away and they said, man, I wish I would have dated around. And then there's me who did date around and, you know, I became very jaded. There's consequences to a lot of things, and I'm not going to speak generally. I'm just going to say that as someone who went from a committed relationship for a long time to dating around for the first time, really, in a secular setting, things happen when you date around, when you sleep around. And one of those things for me was becoming jaded. And right. So there's consequences, and you have to be willing to live with those things.
And I guess that's just maybe part of growing up for some people. I guess that's part of growing up, right? And maybe that's what they mean. Maybe that's what they mean when they're talking about that it's important for you to go through what they call a hoe phase. If that makes sense. I don't know. I didn't coin the term. I'm just using something I've read a lot, that maybe they think it's character building to have your heart broken and to have to chase somebody and they kind of to figure out who you are and where you are via trauma, right? To your relationships, to your heart, to your emotions. And unfortunately, sometimes to your body too. I mean, we're not all making it out of here without something. Some of us are lucky enough to never catch anything in their whole lives. And they've kept their numbers pretty low, but really if you're having sex and you're doing it quite a bit, it seems more often than not, if you're having a lot of partners, that eventually something's going to catch up with you. I mean, the numbers don't lie, right?
Yeah. And there's consequences to everything. And I think we tend to really magnify the sexual thing because it does end up affecting other people sometimes unknowingly. And that's when you know that you need to start reevaluating something. And these things that happen to us as a consequence of our own decisions are checkpoints in our lives where we need to say, hey, like, am I okay with the person that I am right now? Am I okay with the decisions that I've been making? And I'm not saying that getting something is a marker, because there are people that are in committed relationships and their partner cheats and they end up with something. So, of course, that's not their fault. They don't have to reach that crossroad. But if you live a certain lifestyle and it's not just a sexual thing, it addiction, drinking, we all start small, right? So we have these checkpoints where, hey, one glass of wine once a week turned into one glass of wine 7 days a week to a bottle of wine a day. And it's a snowball. Right. So it's not just a sexual thing. We just have to start being better about hitting those checkpoints and making decisions based on what we've seen so far.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense what you're saying. But, you know, the consequences thing, I think you're right when it comes to that, like that there is consequences. There's cause and effect to everything we do. There's checks and balances, natural checks and balances in our lives. And sometimes we learn via trial and error. And I think sometimes people accelerate that trial and error through a tumultuous phase, if you will. Yeah, this whole relationships and sex thing is a super complicated subject with a lot of moving parts. And to be honest, Bethany, I think, you know, we just kind of were able to kind of scratch the surface of it. And we're just two people talking at this point, right? But thanks for being on. I think we're about out of time for what we got here. I'd like to have you back on sometime and we can cover some more stuff about your business and all that fun stuff. And you have a lot to say, and I think people want to hear it. So guys, thanks for listening in. I've had a good time doing this podcast, and I know that it's pretty raw and you're going to hear some things that you might not agree with, and the segues might not be perfect, and I trip over my own tongue, but you know what? I'm still new to this. This is a ground level. So thanks for listening in. And I hope it wasn't too bad for you. We'll do this again. And I'll see y'all next time. Thanks for being on, Bethany.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye, guys.